Hello and welcome to Biocast, the biology podcast from Mike Shaw's help site at www.boothamshaw.blogspot.com. This podcast is designed to give you the help you need when you need it the most. In the next 10 minutes, you're going to need a pen, a piece of paper, and a big hot mug of tea. It's Biocast time. Hello and welcome to episode 13. In this episode, we're going to be looking at the topic of evolution. Now, in order to get started on the topic of evolution, I think we probably need to go right back to genetics, first of all. And our first thing we're going to do is I'd like you to write down, please, what G is the information that's carried inside living things. Did you write down genes? Something like that. I hope you did. Let's just unpack what genes are again. You may remember that genes are little pieces of information which are carried on chromosomes. And each gene governs the formation of a particular protein inside your cells. So, to use a classic example, the reason you have blue eyes, if you do have blue eyes, is because you make a blue protein in your eyes. Why? Because you have a blue protein-making gene. There is also, of course, a brown protein-making gene, which gives people brown eyes. And if you've got double blue, you will have blue eyes. If you have double brown, you will have brown eyes. If you have blue-brown, well, probably the brown that you have is going to dominate the blue, and so what you see is a kind of brown colour. In fact, what you usually get is a subtle mixture of the two, so that's why you get all these different shades of eye colour in the world. Different genes come in varieties called alleles. So, for example, in the human race, there are a range of alleles, or there is a range of alleles, for height. In fact, height is composed of how long your legs are, how long your back is, how tall your head is. So there's an awful lot of variation in human height. But we could think of it for the time being as just a few different alleles on a gene for height. What it means is that there are some people who are genetically very short and some people who are genetically very tall. In the middle are most of the rest of us. We're neither short nor tall. We're somewhere in the middle there because we've got alleles which give us a roughly medium height. It's very, very important to understand that all living things have exactly the same kind of variation. So although one potato plant looks an awful lot like another potato plant to me, and it probably does to you as well, to another potato plant, it would look very different. They would have things which stand out, slightly different heights, slightly different coloured flowers, slightly different shaped leaves. Who can say? But the point is, there's a lot of variation there. And that variation is generated by the alleles which the organism has. Where does it get alleles from? Well, of course, it gets them from its parents. And you could say, well, okay, well, where did they get their alleles from? And you could track it back and back and back. Ultimately, new alleles are being created all the time. And they're created by the process we call mutation. Mutation is where a little piece of the gene gets messed up somehow. More often than not, a mutation is a bad thing, because a messed up gene is usually worse than a gene that's working properly. Every now and then, however, you get a change to a gene which actually, in some circumstance, turns out to be more useful than the gene in the original setting. Anyway, I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself here. Another way in which you get variation in living things is because they have two parents, or at least most living things have two parents, which means that their genes are a mixture of the alleles of two different individuals. So there's a whole shuffling process going on there. We call that random assortment. And of course, don't forget that you also have random mating. You can, within the species, you could choose to pretty much mate with any other member of the species of the opposite sex. So that's a kind of random choice, and that throws more into the mixture as well. Interestingly enough, in some species, mating is not random. Mating is actually chosen according to all sorts of key markers, how long your antlers are, if you're a stag, how big your peacock tail is, that sort of thing. So some mating is not random. Anyway, add all of that together, and the overwhelming conclusion is that living things show tremendous variation, even within a species. And that means that if there is a particular environmental selection pressure, if there's something which is causing organisms to either succeed or fail, if there's variation, presumably some members of the species will succeed better than others. Some will fail. The failure might be that they die, or it might be just that they don't get to mate. It could be either of those two. It doesn't really make any difference from evolution's point of view. And we could say that natural selection is operating on the variation. And given that the variation is caused by alleles, we can say that natural selection is operating on the alleles. let that run for a few generations, and let's put in a concrete example so that we know the kind of thing we're talking about. Peacock tails. I always use this in my teaching. Imagine ancestral peacocks, a long, long time ago, with little, short, colourless tails. And they're perfectly happy mooching around in the forests of China, doing what they do, and then one day, a little beam of cosmic radiation comes flying through the atmosphere, and it smacks into a male peacock's gonads in just the right place to mutate one of his little sperm cells. That little sperm cell now carries a modified gene, and it was the gene which was going to say what colour the feathers were. And now, instead of being a kind of dull grey colour, those feathers are bright blue. When he has some babies, one of his little babies, one of the little males, has now got bright blue feathers because he came from the mutated sperm cell. All the girls in his generation go crazy for it. They love those blue feathers. They can't get enough of them. So he successfully manages to mate with a lot of the female peacocks, whereas his grey brothers, not so good. They don't do so well. In the next generation, therefore, there are more blue peacocks because the blue colour has been selected for and the grey colour has been selected against. That would be an example of natural selection in action. And in fact, we see examples of natural selection in reality all around us all the time. And pretty much every feature of any animal or plant that you can notice is there because natural selection put it there. Right, now I have to add something else into the mix as well. All organisms can potentially overbreed. In other words, they make far more offspring than they need to replace themselves. And so it's a bit of a grim truth, this, but in the wild world, most offspring, most baby things, die. And again, that means that there is tremendous pressure to be a successful baby thing, because an awful lot of your brothers and sisters are not going to make it. Even at the level of human beings, we have that. During the process of manufacturing you, your father actually submitted hundreds of millions of sperm cells, but only one of them survived. You won a race against hundreds of millions of competitors. Your mother chose randomly from about 500 million egg cells, and in a way you won a competition there as well. The egg cells that she didn't use, maybe they got used to make your brother or your sister another time, but nevertheless you won that competition. Over time then, natural selection will lead to an alteration in the value for a particular allele characteristic. What we say is that there will be a phenotypic shift in the value of that particular character. For example, human beings might evolve to get taller or evolve to have bigger brains. That's what we did do over the last 100,000 years, something like that. However, some of you will be saying, well, we haven't made any new species yet. All you've ended up with is a peacock with blue feathers. It's still a peacock. Or a peacock with long blue feathers, if you want to add in another mutation. Or a human with a big brain. You haven't actually changed anything. Right, how about this? Imagine a bit of natural selection that actually selects on the far end of the range. So it selects only very short things and only very tall things. And all the things in the middle lose. We would call that destabilizing selection. What it does is it means that all the little short ones, they survive, all the tall ones, they survive, and in the middle, they don't. Run that on for a few generations, and what you end up with is a group of short organisms and tall organisms who are all in the same species, but maybe they're not so good at mating with each other anymore. Maybe the short ones can't reach. Maybe the tall ones don't want them to reach. Something like that. So the short ones tend to spend time with the short ones. The tall ones tend to spend time with the tall ones. Keep on winding that on for millions of years, and you might actually get to the point where the short ones are so different and the tall ones are so different that they really are no longer in the same species. In a situation like that, we would say that speciation has taken place, and what was one ancestral species has split apart into two new species. It doesn't have to be a destabilizing selection. It could be that you've got a group of organisms and continental drift literally snaps their continent in two, and you end up with animals on one side of an ocean which are totally the same as animals on the other side of an ocean, but over geological time, because they're separated, they will gradually go their own way with their own mutations and their own natural selection. Something like that happened to crocodiles, for example, which is why you have crocodiles in West Africa, you have crocodiles in Indonesia and Northern Australia, and you have crocodiles in South America, all of which are quite similar animals, but not exactly the same anymore. They all came possibly from one ancestral group millions and millions of years ago, when all of those continent points were all stuck together in a big continent we call Gondwana land. That's a long time ago. That's way back in the Cretaceous period. But Gondwana land split up, and the crocodiles went their own ways, and there they are now, spread around the world. That geographical separation is another way that you might actually get speciation. Okay, I want to delve into all of that again in the time that we've got left. I made a few points. One, all species show variation. Two, all species potentially over-reproduce and therefore a lot of them die. Three, natural selection can allow some members of a species to survive and other members of a species to fail. Four, all variation, or most variation, is inherited via your genes from your parents. Four things. Those four observations are very, very important. And although I've dressed them up in a more modern style of language, they're actually the four things that Darwin, Charles Darwin, the famous British biologist who went around the world in 1832, I think it was, on board the Beagle, he actually made those observations, and it led him to start thinking about the process of evolution. Why do I mention Darwin? Well, the examiners love you to know about Darwin, and they want you to know his four observations. And what they'll do is they'll give you a question which requires you to use Darwin's four statements in order to explain a modern example of natural selection in action. Take the example of rats. Now, rats have become quite resistant to the poison, warfarin, which is used in towns and cities to try and control the rat populations. And the question might be something like, explain why the rats have become resistant to poison, or why does poison no longer work, or something like that. And what you would say is, one, there was genetic variation in the rat population, and some individuals were able to resist the poison naturally. Two, the rats over-reproduce anyway and produce lots of offspring, many of whom are going to die. Three, when the warfarin poison was introduced, the ones which were not resistant to it died off more easily than the ones which were resistant to it. This is natural selection. Four, the resistant rats give their gene for resistance to their offspring, and so the future populations of rats have an ever-increasing percentage of resistant genes in the population, so the population becomes more resistant to the warfarin. I find that my students find it very, very difficult to apply those four statements to different situations. It's always going to be those four things: variation, over-reproduction, natural selection, and inheritance. Try and get used to it. Try and set yourself a few little examples. I might set you one at the end of this podcast and see how you do. All right, the other thing examiners would like you to know about is that Darwin wasn't the first person to try and explain the world as we see it today. Before him, there came a French scientist called Jean-Baptiste Lamarck, who was a very intelligent man, a very clever scientist who advanced science an awful lot. His theory of evolution was that species actually were able to pass on what he called acquired characteristics. In other words, and the classic example, I might as well use it as well, is giraffes. Little short giraffes want to reach those leaves up in the trees, so they stretch their necks, and now they can reach the leaves. Because they stretched their necks, that means that their babies will have longer necks, and so on and so on. It made sense at the time, because we didn't know about genes, and we hadn't had Darwin to make all of his measurements and observations. However, Lamarck falls down rather heavily, because if you think about it, that means that if somebody loses a leg in a car accident, they ought to have only one-legged children from there on. That doesn't work. So, unfortunately, Lamarckian inheritance seems to be a load of rubbish. The other view, going back much, much before Lamarck, of course, is the whole host of religious views about how the world came into existence. Now, the syllabus requires you to know that these religious views exist. People who believe in them are sometimes known as creationists. Of course, creationists only ever buy into one particular creation myth. They might buy into the Judeo-Christian creation myth, but that means that they're not buying into the Egyptian or the pagan creation myth or whatever it happens to be. So they're choosing one particular set of interesting stories to believe in, but they're also denying the truth of any others. So for me, creationism simply doesn't stack up. It's illogical. The only one which really seems to satisfy all the observations that have been made of the world is Darwinian evolution, dressed up with alleles and genes and DNA and mutations, none of which Darwin knew about in his day, but nevertheless, all of which he kind of predicted would be discovered, and he got there an awful long time before we did discover them. So well done, Darwin. I think you still stand up. But you do need to know about Lamarck, and you do need to know about creationist ideas. And if there are any American listeners here, you may well go to a school where creationism is taught. If that's the case, I hope that this podcast has given you some good questions that you might like to ask of your teachers, and you might like to compare Darwinian observations with creationist observations and see which ones you like best. Right, now then, let's finish off with some questions. First thing I'd like to write down, please. Number one is, what is an allele? Number two, how would you best describe what is natural selection? Number three, what do I mean when I use the word speciation? And number four, can you name two scientists who submitted ideas about how evolution might possibly work? Right, well, those were really simple questions, weren't they? But I'm trying to keep the podcast a bit shorter here. An allele is one of several varieties of a gene. Natural selection is where one characteristic caused by an allele is favoured over others in a situation. Speciation is where one species splits into two or more species. And two scientists that you definitely need to know the names of, Charles Darwin and Jean-Baptiste Lamarck. Okay, thank you very much for listening. I hope you join me next time on Biocast, and good luck with your biology revision wherever in the world you are. You've been listening to Biocast with me, Mike Shaw. If you found it helpful, why not pick up a few more at boothamshaw.blogspot.com. See you next time on Biocast.